from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, they were just a bunch of Marin County hippies. But in the early 1970s, they pioneered the sport of mountain biking. Today, it's a billion-dollar-a-year industry, but back then, no one knew what a mountain bike was. A new documentary called Clunkers tells the story of how a group of fun-loving kids turned Marin County into the epicenter of the mountain biking universe. We'll talk with these bikers who literally reinvented the wheel about that golden era of biking and what lies ahead for what's now an Olympic sport. We'll get started with this hour of Forum right after this. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in this week for Michael Krasny. Well, back in the early 1970s, a group of friends in Marin County, almost all of them young men, started taking their bikes off of paved roads and pathways onto trails of dirt and rocks along Mount Tamalpais. They bought up old beater bikes with fat balloon wheels and refit them with parts to suit the kind of beating they'd get off the beaten path. Well, in less than a decade, mountain biking became known all over the world. Today, it's a billion-dollar-a-year industry, and a new documentary called Clunkers tells the story of these self-described stupid hippies in Marin and how they created a huge new sport. And some of those pioneers are with us here in the studio this morning, and this is going to be fun. Gary Fisher, Joe Brees, Charlie Kelly, and Wendy Craig, welcome to Forum.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, take us back to that era. It was really the late 60s. And you were a bunch of hippies, at least that's how you described yourself. Gary, tell us what was happening in your part of the world up there in Marin County during those years.
Well, Marin County, I mean, I was going to Redwood High, class of 68. I barely made it out of that high school. I mean, on graduation day, the seniors were going to beat me up, cut my hair off. Well, I was in Calistoga on a farm, and it was fun, and I was having a great time there. I didn't go to graduation. You know, I got my diploma next year, and I've never seen that thing since.
And that was what, 1968, 67.
You know, and
summer of love.
Totally. And I was like half the time I was over here in the city, you know, the Haight-Ashbury. And it was a lot of fun. Indeed. And I met Charlie. You know, Charlie, tell how we met.
It's a great story. I was the only road bike rider I knew. Had a bike, didn't know any of the other people, but I had met this girl who told me about this guy. She said, if you met this guy, you guys would be friends right away. And his name is Spider. That's all she knew him by. And he hangs out with the Grateful Dead. And so one day I see this guy. Well, if you're going to call a guy Spider, that'd be the guy. He has all arms and legs and hair. And I said, hey, are you this guy? And he said, well, actually, my name's Gary. And I said, well, let's ride. And he's with this other little guy, another hippie guy. And I said, where are you guys going? Well, they were going to the Grateful Dead office to look at album cover art for the guy he was with, who is named Marmaduke, played in a band called The New Riders with Garcia. So 10 minutes after I met these guys, we were at the Grateful Dead office looking at artwork for the album cover. And
how fun is that?
And, you know, and then we went for a ride. And after that, I don't know, a few months later, Gary became my roommate, and we probably were joined at the hip for about the next 10 or 12 years.
Yeah. And so you had a road bike.
Oh, yeah. And we all did.
And where did you get it?
I mean, well, I had given up my car because I worked for a rock band, and they drove my car into the ground, and I figured if I got another car, they'd do it again. So how can I get around and they won't abuse my transportation? If I ride a bike, they won't borrow my bike.
Yeah.
So I became a cyclist just for transportation.
Yeah.
And the first thing I noticed was, even though I'd been a cyclist for a week and there weren't that many out on the road in 1971 or so, I still rode faster than everybody I saw. And I've only been doing this a week.
Yeah. Well,
you know, and I'm riding a real terrible cheap bike, you know, so I just kind of, over the next year or so, upgraded and learned about bikes. I didn't know a thing about them, but by the time I met Gary, I was riding a passable road bike, yeah. Although I got better.
Now, when I was a kid, in roughly that era, I'm a little younger than you guys, but I had a Huffy bike, heavy steel bike with a banana seat, streamers on the handlebars. Are those the kinds of bikes that you were talking about,
different? We're after that era. I mean, we're before that era. We all had the big 26-inch, one-size-fits-all bikes, and by the time 20-inchers and Stingrays came around, we were all too big.
There was, in the 50s, you had, like, the cruiser bikes left over from, like, Arnold Schwinn, like the old Huffies, like that way. And then you had, like, English 3-speeds, and then you had 10-speeds. When I met Charlie, we were all on 10-speeds. When I started riding with my friends down in Burlingame, when I lived down there with my parents, that was, like, when I was, like, 14. We'd ride 3-speeds, English 3-speeds. So I went from like I had a 20-inch. My very first bike was a Schwinn Spitfire, 20-inch, balloon tire bike. My next bike was an English 3-speed, 24-inch wheel, like that. I mean.
Yeah, that's what I had. I had a 3-speed in third grade.
And then when I was 12, it was a 10-speed, Italian 10-speed. Oof.
Now, and those are fairly sophisticated kinds of bikes with the gears and the front brakes.
Oh, it's a total discipline, but we're all into it. Yeah. I mean, totally learned the discipline. I mean, clips and straps with cleats, so you couldn't get out of the pedals, You had, narrow saddle, you had drop bars and assume the position, man. We were like road racers, We all learned road racing, and that's where we met, basically, or that's where I met Joe. Really, was Velo Club Temel Pius.
Yeah, and Joe, how did you get the idea, or who got the idea of racing down the side of a mountain on one of these bikes?
Well, that was something that we were doing even before the fat tire bike came along. And
you were doing it on those thin little wheels.
Yeah, I grew up in Mill Valley, and there was a panoramic highway leading up the mountain and, of course, back down the mountain. And I spent my youth flying down the mountain on road racing bikes from an early age. When the fat tire thing came along about 1973 for most of us in Marin County, it just extended to the off-road from there.
And where did it come from? I mean,
where I saw it, Gary. I was going to Redwood High, and I had some friends there. Todd Beeson, he lived in Belvedere, so did I. And his friends were Larkspur Canyon Gang. And these guys, that was the first, off-road idiocy sort of thing category. But, you got to go – you go back 120 years, all bicycles were off-road. There were no road. But this whole thing of, using it as a roller coaster and going really fast, that sort of legend. I mean, I heard it like the Larkspur Canyon Gang.
Yeah, and that was late 60s, right? When you first
late 60s, when I do the drumming circles with them, stuff like that. They heard I was a bike racer because I was a road racer. I'd been road racing since 63, and they said, "Hey, you got to check this thing out." And I went out riding with them, and I said, "Holy mackerel, this is fun!" But
holy mackerel. I'm sure that's what you said.
But and it was a whole culture because it was like it was a whole culture, a whole thing going on.
Wendy, you're the only woman here, and I suspect you were the only girl riding back then. How did you get into it? And I mean, cause it really was a lot of testosterone going on.
Well,
there,
actually,
wasn't it?
I did not come in from the road bike angle, so I was in a reverse mode. I got into it because my neighbor, Fred Wolf, was friends with Charlie and Gary. And together they kind of ganged up on me and convinced me. And they hobbled together a 56-pound, quote, state-of-the-art 5-speed drum brake, J.C. Higgins. And I remember so vividly my first ride. It was maybe a total of 2 miles, all single track. I was terrified. I was so terrified that I swore I'm never getting on a bike again. And I think within a week, I'm sure, they had me back out. And it was a process that the more I did it, the more I got into it. And there were different angles that they would use to get me out. There are some wildflowers growing out there. Or I saw this incredible mushroom. Or I know where there's an egret's nest, just these different kind of, incentives.
Why do you think they – why you? I mean, because there weren't a lot of women, right?
Well, there were no other women. I was, quote, the token woman, I guess. But
token. We were trying as hard as we could.
Yeah, there weren't a lot. I guess I just fell into it because I was always a tomboy, and I grew up with roller skates. So I always had that mode of transportation.
You were used to falling down.
Right. I would go to sleep with my roller skates on. That's how much I was into my – I had the roller skate key around my neck all the time. So it was kind of a gradual – you know, it was actually –
easy transition.
It was a transition that I just fell right into it. And once I got into the groove of it, I realized this is a personal freedom that you can literally fly. It just came at a time in my life when I needed that too. So,
and she got good at it too.
And you had a camera, right?
And I had a camera. I had a brand new camera. I had just gotten a Neeker mat, and it was a hobby that I got so into. So I packed all that gear on my back every ride I went on. I had about 10 or 12 pounds of gear, camera gear on my back. So I took photos, not just of the mountain bikes, but all the flowers, the scenery. I even photographed the trails and the roads.
Right.
And the smoking axles.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. Well, in fact, a lot of your photographs are in this movie, Clunkers, which, by the way, is airing as part of the Truly California series this Sunday on KQED. And we're going to play a little clip of it. In this bit where they're talking about repack, and I want to just have you define, tell us what that is and how it came up with that name, Gary.
Well, it was Fred that found this road, basically, and it was a real straight shot, and we go down it on our bikes, and it was when we first were getting into this, and we still were running coaster brake bikes, and you just have a rear coaster brake.
Just the kind where you backpedal.
Where you backpedal. There'd be no front brake, nothing, and by the time you get to the bottom of that thing, I mean, the rear end was totally smoking, spitting. You know, you had a contrail coming out, you know. And what you had to do after that was go home, take the rear end apart, you know, take the rear hub totally apart, clean everything out, and repack it with grease.
So it just burned up. The grease burned up.
Yeah. So that got to be known as repack.
All right. Let's listen to a clip from the film.
The first competition for me off-road was repack, you know, and regrettably, too. It's like it scared the living crap out of me, the whole concept of, you know, racing downhill.
That's 2 miles downhill and about a 1,400-foot drop.
And it wasn't fun to go down repack. I mean, it's never been fun. It's always been a little bit scary. And especially if you just want to go slow, because you can't go slow down repack. You have to let go.
At the start line, I was so terrified. I could barely turn the pedals. I was so scared. I was just like this great big bowl of Jell-O, you know. It was hairball.
We have like a party up on the top. I mean, everybody's all excited. You're nervous. You're ready to go.
A lot of competition, a lot of gung-ho, kind of, let's get this thing going, you know, because I'm going to beat your butt.
That's an excerpt from the film Clunkers, directed by William Savage. It airs this Sunday night on KQED as part of the Truly California series and stars, among others, Gary Fisher, Joe Breeze, Charlie Kelly, and Wendy Craig. They're all with us here in the studio. Wendy Craig, a hairball moment. What is that?
Oh, dear. I regret that term.
Yeah, I just have to pay a royalty to Chris McManus.
Right. An old buddy of ours used to use that to describe just about everything, and I sort of picked it up, and it kind of stuck. It has no relevance at all, really.
There's nothing in the film, and it's a really fun film, but there's no horrible accidents. I mean, you see people who've fallen off, but how often?
I
mean,
I'll tell you some facts. Okay, we'll get into facts now. I'm part of USA Cycling. I'm on the board of trustees there for NORBA. And we found, well, actually, it's Matt Fitzinger and the Northern California High School Mountain Bike League. You know, those guys, you know, that's going off. You realize that cross-country mountain biking is actually safer for a kid than any field sport? That's pretty cool. You don't go that fast on a mountain bike. it's hairball, right, and everything, but it's not like – and you don't have somebody like throwing their body at you in an obtuse angle and things.
And no cars.
And no cars.
Yeah. And no balls.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's actually, you know, it's like hairball, but it's pretty sane.
Yeah. And some of the clips, there were people wearing helmets. They actually look like football helmets to me.
No, man, nothing existed. Come on. It was like Jim Jennings down in like we used to race with him back in the day, and he founded Giro, and he started that whole new style of foam helmet and everything. We think of things in this place, you know, new ideas and things like that. And the thing, you know, it's a crazy story what happened afterwards, you know, how the thing got spread. And, you know, there was a period like 7 years between the time where we were totally convinced this thing was just going to fly sky high and where you could actually walk into a bike shop and buy one. I mean, right. It was a lot of struggle.
So we worked hard. Long gestation.
Joe Briggs. Yeah. Charlie.
Well, as far as helmets go, there was a couple of guys wore helmets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the only helmet you could get then would be either a skateboard or a hockey helmet, you know. And I had a skateboard helmet, had all the skateboard gear because that's what I did. But I never wore the helmet. I wore all the knee pads and elbow pads and the gloves and... And I had a couple of fairly horrible accidents, but
got right back on.
I,
maybe not right away.
Took a minute or two to get back on, yeah. But you know, I had a couple of spots there where it hurt for a minute.
Yeah, Joe Briggs, you built some of the very first mountain bikes, I guess. Is that fair to say?
We were riding these back in '73 and all, and in fact, I started making road racing frames in '74. And doing this fat tire thing about as much as anybody, and so people were asking me, "Hey Joe, how about making a new frame for it to take the place of these heavy old Schwinn frames that were busting?"
They're just like splitting in two, going down.
No, the joints would be cracking, and even if they were a heavy frame, they were just mild steel. And so I was making frames out of things like manganese moly steel or chromoly steel, lighter with butted tubing and all that. Eventually I was talked into by Charlie Kelly and Larry Craig, who gave me $300 to get the tubing. And so I made 10, cut up 10 sets of tubes to build these bikes that were, the first successful purpose-built frames for what we were doing.
Now, you didn't have a factory or anything. Were you just soldering this stuff together?
No, I had a machine shop.
A machine shop, okay.
My father was a machinist in Sausalito. He was in the sports car business. I had the sports car center in Sausalito, and when he retired, he brought all the machines home, and so I was right in a 2.5-car garage at home that I was doing all this and piecing it together. Built those 10 frames, and actually, those were the first bikes that were built up with all brand-new equipment. It was the first time you had a shiny new bike, mm-hmm. and you really couldn't call it a clunker anymore. And that was 1977.
That's like the first 5 years were definitely garages and living rooms.
Yeah,
bikes came from.
Yeah, and Charlie, what difference did it make to have sort of a custom built brand new mountain bike?
Well, for me, it was a question of, as Joe was saying, these frames weren't really made for the kind of riders we are, and what we are is very big, tough guys who ride lots of miles, and the frames would just disintegrate under me because I was just stressing the frame so hard from just the pounding of just riding hard. And I would get maybe 6 or 7 months out of one of these frames that were so hard to find. And then the thing would just start falling apart. And finally, at some point, you know, how much would it cost to just have something put together that would outlive one of these? Because the hassle of replacing these frames was getting extreme. We'd already used up all the local supply and having to go further and further afield. And, hey, at some point, I'll pay whatever it takes.
Yeah. You know? And what were some of the, you know, Wendy, what were some of the innovations that came down the pike? I mean, you know, Gary was talking about, front brakes, which were not part of those early bikes that you used. What else? What were some of the better ideas that...
I'm probably not the best person to ask because I just rode it.
You just rode it. Gary, how about you?
Well, it was what my part in it was, as I brought out, I got a really strong set of brakes on my bike. The bike I made in the end of '74, I finally, you know, I said, like, I wanted a good off-road bike, and I noticed it needed to have super strong brakes, and it needed to have super wide gear ratio, and real long crank arms. And just set about putting that whole thing together, that package, and borrowed from tandem bicycle, motorcycle, you know, for brake cables and brake levers, and from the Japanese and the French, which had a lot of like old school cyclotourist style wide gear derailleurs. And I just sort of, I had a really good knowledge. I've been working in bike shops since I was 14, and I made all my own equipment when I did the light shows, and that was a big deal here. You know, it was huge.
Gary was the first person in the county to graft the gears from the road racing bikes onto the bikes pull away from us going up the hills.
Yeah, because at the time, I mean, people make a big deal out of that, but to me, I mean, it was sort of a no-brainer because I was riding a cyclocross bike already off-road, and it's like all the bikes I rode had gears, had derailleur gears on it. So what I needed for that bike was a super wide range.
More
gear. That was the more unprecedented part, you know, because they didn't have wide rangers, you know, before as much. I mean, John Finley Scott, I mean, he's a guy that was our earliest financier. We did, Charlie and I wrote our first catalog, 79, on his word processor. That thing would fill up half of this room. It was insane, man. And, like, he was a big off-road proponent. 53, he made it himself, you know, a balloon tire bike with multiple gears and brakes. But his brakes were sort of worthless, and his gears weren't that wide either. You know, I mean, basically what I did is, you know, made was something that you could remake again and again.
Yeah.
And, like, the sort of black art sort of spread out, and people picked it up. You know, I mean, our roommate Alan Bonds, real early practitioner, used to repaint frames, do a nicer job than I did. Gosh, you know, put together some really cool bikes.
They were works of art, really.
Yeah. And then Joe took it to the next level, you know, super nice frame.
I seem to remember from the film, Joe, that some of the parts, like the brake cables maybe, came from motorcycles. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were heavy-duty parts.
Yeah, and the brake levers. Those were the first. The Breezers were the first bikes with the Magura brake levers.
You know, I was mentioning to you guys that I did the AIDS ride for the first time recently from San Francisco to L.A., and I was so proud of myself because I didn't get a single flat tire.
Wow.
There were a lot of people who did, but I was not one of them. So, but I would think that would be a big risk for going downhill over rocks and all that stuff. How do you avoid that?
That was the advantage of the big tires.
The ones we had, they were ridiculous. The Uniroyal knobby tire.
Yeah,
they
26,
were amazing. 26 by 2125.
That's it.
Yeah, and those things, man, we'd run them. I mean, you could run them. Oh, they're ridiculous. You could run them for a year, and they'd never flat.
The same tire from the balloon tire bikes that were popular in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
They were not light.
Came right off the tractor. You know?
It was like that.
But it's really what inspired us to go off-road as much as we did, that the volume of that tire and the cushiness of the ride and the imperviousness to flats.
Because before that was a big problem, Gary?
Well, I mean, you take a regular road bike off-road. I mean, like my cyclocross bike, I'd take that thing off-road. I'd take like three tires with me. I'd ride for 2 hours. I'd patch tires for 3 hours. It was ridiculous, you know? Yeah.
And was the going up, was that part of it, or is it really all just coming down?
Well, it was going up, too.
Yeah.
You had to do that, which is why you needed the wider gear.
You got to earn it before you burn it.
All of us here were into the self-sufficient aspect of cycling, and that meant you were riding up the mountain, too. It wasn't so much about hitching a ride up the mountain, although we did that occasionally.
Yeah, coming down.
Occasionally, we went in a truck. But
Joe, that's sort of where we found it. When we went to, like, Larkspur Canyon Gang and what you guys were doing in Mill Valley, was getting up on a truck.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have much more in the second half of our show with Gary Fisher, Joe Breeze, Charlie Kelly, and Wendy Craig. They're all in the film Clunkers. And you can find out more, by the way, at clunkers.com. It'll be airing tonight, Sunday night on Truly California here on KQED. Join us if you'd like, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here this week for Michael Krasny, and we're talking about the history of mountain biking in California. It was started pretty much right here in the Bay Area in Marin County. There's a film about it called Clunkers, directed by William Savage. It airs as part of the Truly California series on KQED-TV this Sunday night at 6 p.m. And four of the stars of that film are with us here, Gary Fisher, Joe Breeze, Charlie Kelly, and Wendy Craig. And if you'd like to talk with us about your experiences biking or questions for them, give us a call, 866-733-6786. Email us also, forum@kqed.org. Let's go to the phones, and Rodney is on the line in Stockton, California. Hi, Rodney.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Go ahead. My dad used to own a bike shop in Santa Clara from 70 to 79, and we actually heard about these guys way down there. There's a bunch of nutcases going downhill off the rim. It was awesome for us because we were all starting to get into motocross BMX stuff, and we wanted to take BMX bikes and actually shove them downhill. We could run the little 24 or 20 frames and the 26 inch frames down Stevens Creek Reservoir.
Rodney, I'm sorry you're breaking up a little bit, but let me ask these guys: did you hear a lot from people throughout? I mean, how did the word spread? Other people heard about you that were doing different things.
Joe, maybe this is a good intro to these fellows from down the Cupertino, Sunnyvale area where Rodney was. Russ Mann and his brother and Carter Cox and a number of others. They came up to a cyclocross race in Mill Valley in December 1974 when we were just in the incubation period. And they showed up with some pretty advanced bikes for the day. And we were really surprised to see that. And we were checking out these bikes at the race. I had my 37 Schwinn there, and Gary was down at the race, and I believe Charlie was there too.
Yeah.
Otis Guy was there. And we were looking at these bikes, it impressed how advanced they were.
Was this the Moro Bike Club? What became? Yes. Was that a different?
Yeah, that's the Moro. That's the Moro Dirt Club, and they would ride down off Skyline on Regnart Road, I believe it was, or Poline Road, down to Sunnyvale, Cupertino, Saratoga areas. Their stomping ground, but it happened to be their last hurrah. This race in Mill Valley, December 1974, and. It was interesting because we really wanted to hook up with them, and they had like vanished. They had gone elsewhere, and they were on to new things. And we didn't find out until much later with what they had done down there.
Can I add a little
Charlie,
something
yeah.
to that?
Yeah.
When we first started racing downhill, it was going to be a one-time event just to decide among a very small group who had it. But as we know now, it turned into a series because everybody wants another shot at the winner. Within a couple of weeks of our first race, we had guys coming from Berkeley that we'd never met, never heard of. They found out somehow in Berkeley that we were putting on these races. They located us and tracked us down. So the word was getting around somehow, and I, to this day, have no idea how those guys found out about us, but it was getting around, and as soon as we had a race, people were showing up that we never heard of.
Yeah, and of course, there was no internet back then. No,
to
spread it all around.
The viral connection was the races, road races. I mean, you know, I was on a road, like, I go to 30, 40 races a year, right? I'd go all over Western United States to go to races. I mean, I spent so much time in a stupid metro van and stuff, 55 miles an hour, going to another bike race. And I bring along my clunker, you know, and people go, what's that? And you tell them what it is. And, you know, people would tell people. I think that was that. And then Charlie wrote a story, like in Outside Magazine. I wrote a story in Bicycling Magazine. I was writing for Bicycling Magazine.
So you were proselytizing in a way.
Totally. I mean, one of the most important things we did was we had Wendy's photos, and we'd been practicing showing, doing a slideshow, you know. And a slideshow was at, where was that?
Lucas's place.
Yeah, his screening room. Yeah. Right. And we had it wired. And Bicycling Magazine had us do a whole, you know, here's what mountain biking is. Well, who showed up? All the big wigs in the industry. And Charlie and I had a fantastic show. Not a good show, an incredible show.
And what came of that?
Well, we got the connections. Yeah.
Yeah, really, like Gary says, it was the racing. And Repack was what brought everybody together from around to share their ideas and their enthusiasm for this new sport. And that really is what put Marin on the map as the birthplace of the sport, because it was from Marin, from Repack, where it spilled out of Marin and infected other areas across the country and the world.
Right. But we went to the top, too. You know, that was a thing. It was like there was the total grassroots thing going on. I mean, anything that moved, we were all over it. You know, we wanted to, you know, hey, come on out, ride the race,
yeah, you know, no entry fee, you know, come on, there are prizes, there's everything, and it's a fair race, and it got to be known as a great testing ground.
Was it competitive or just?
Oh, yeah.
Charlie,
let me expound just briefly here. Now, I was a starter, which meant, and the way we started the race, the guys with the fastest times would start last. And that's so you didn't have guys running right up on top of, you know, slower riders. We'd sort them out by based on their previous times. So as maybe the 15 or 20 people would start at the top, by the time you get down to the last four or five, well, they're guys that know each other very well. They're guys who are very competitive with each other. And the atmosphere would just, it would just get thick because nobody'd be talking. Nobody'd be even looking at each other in the eye. Everybody looking at their bike, getting focused. But the conversation stopped when it got down to that last half dozen guys because those were the guys who really, really were competitive and knew each other and competed with each other.
And were you competitive with each other?
You bet. Yeah, I mean, you bet.
Yeah, it was like, you know, and you've ridden a course, you know, four or five times that week, you know, walked up, ridden down, walked up, ridden down,
got
every,
it out.
Every single corner wired.
So, Wendy, who was the best?
The best.
Wendy was the fastest.
Well, I was the fastest woman, but as far as they were all tops. I mean, there were probably the top five stayed the top five.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. David is on the line north of Sacramento. Hi, David.
Hey there. I just heard the topic of the show and I laughed. I have a history amongst my friends of not recognizing future trends, so I'm the guy who says that rap will never last. I went to high school in Larkspur at Redwood High School, and I remember when the mountain biking was being developed, and I remember my friends would say, hey, do you want to go up and do this thing? We're going to bomb down the mountain. I thought, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
What's next?
I could have been a millionaire. You know?
What's next? You want to know what's next? What's your next forecast?
Yeah.
I still believe that computers are a fad, you know? Anyway, thanks. I enjoy the show. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, David. Was there a lot of competition among the cities in within Marin County, Larkspur, Mill Valley, Sausalito, or
Sausalito.
I mean, Fairfax and San Anselmo? I mean, were you guys competing with each other? What didn't it break down that way, Gary?
Oh, no.
I didn't
there
see
was
any competition.
A little. Oh, there was like.
Well, not only in the racing aspect, but not as far as because you could ride the mountain all day and never see another.
Right.
Person.
Right.
You could get to places where it would take a hiker literally all day to get to, and we would get there in an hour or two. You know?
There was a civic pride.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'd walk down a street in Fairfax, and people would poke their head out of the bar and say, you're going to beat that guy from Mill Valley. You know?
Meaning Joe.
Yeah. Or whoever, you know, from Larkspur. It didn't matter. You know,
so, what did the winners get, by the way?
Yeah. It was mostly bike merchandise. The bike shops.
We could go around to the bike shops because they knew that we were going to go out there and destroy a whole bunch of stuff on the weekend. And mostly they would give away the turkey stuff that, you know, they wasn't going to sell anyway. But the deal is that there was no entry fee, and I still managed to come up with prizes because the bike shops, they all knew me, and we were doing a lot of business there. And they donated stuff, and we had prizes. Whatever.
I thought there was going to be a more colorful answer.
Well,
that was like,
some stuff is too colorful for radio.
Okay. We got an email here. At one time, I received or subscribed to the Fat Tire Flyer. I had Volume 1, Edition 1. Wonder who were those guys? Anybody know? Charlie?
Well, I published it, and I wrote most of it, and I loved it, and it dominated my life for about 7 years, and it was the first publication for mountain bikers, and it really started off to be a club newsletter, but the club only met one time, and then and I made the mistake of putting issue one on that cover of the one that he's talking about there, and when you say issue one, then a couple of weeks later, people start saying, well, when's issue two coming out? So somehow we struggled along, and I learned how to publish magazines in a day before you did it on a computer, and lost a lot of money. Fortunately, it was somebody else's, and had a great time, traveled around, and it was cool to be the guy that I was then, and then it got swamped by all the other magazines that come out with huge
Lossy
publishing companies
and
behind them, and you know, we got just overwhelmed in the market, it stopped being fun after it got to be a grind. But I had a good time for a while, that's for sure.
We got an email from Mary in Oakland. It's a question for you, Joe. She writes, I love the Breezer bike and want to get one, but I don't need all the gears of the more expensive model. I do need a larger frame. I'm 5'10", which puts me into the more expensive model. Why can't I get the 3-speed with a larger frame?
So Mary is talking about the bikes I've been focused on for the last 10 years or so, which is bikes for everyday transportation with the racks, fenders, lights, and everything like that. And we'll have more bikes available in for our 2010 line that hopefully will suit your needs, Mary.
All right. And do you have a website, Joe?
Yeah, breezerbikes.com.
Breezerbikes.com.
So when are you updated with the 10 stuff?
Pardon me?
The website. When's it updated?
With 010?
Yeah.
Or 10? That's later on in the year when they're available toward the end of this year.
All right. Back to the phones now. Mark is on the line in Cupertino. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Derek. The current evolution of mountain bikes.
All right, Mark, you're going to have to be – Mark, I'm going to ask you to make your point really quickly because you're on a bad phone line.
Okay. So I do well 29-inch mountain bikes, the so-called 9ers. I'm 6'1". I want to thank Dick Brawl has worked on that. Where where's that going?
All right, where's it going? We're going to let you go because of the lousy cell line. Anybody want to take that up? Gary?
It's like going great. You know, 29er thing in the United States is going crazy right now. People are, like, buying them like crazy. And we're making a whole bunch of them, have been making them for quite a time now. And, you know, Europe is slower to catch on. You'd be surprised in Japan, they ride them like crazy. A lot of, like, Southeast Asia is way into them. So the market, you know, all kinds of makers, like Scott yesterday is going to do one, and they're a conservative European company. Jeez. So people are making forks. People are making tires. It's here to stay. It's just another size.
Yeah. We got an email here. You mentioned, did you mention China? I thought you did a minute ago.
Sometimes.
KC writes, he says mountain biking is safe. He being Gary, says mountain biking is safer than a high school team sports. How about the people in China painting these bikes in unsafe conditions? No labor, no environmental standards there. Fisher and the rest could have made plenty of money by manufacturing here instead of going mass market and offshoring jobs.
Excellent point. I welcome that. I'm part of a company now, wholly owned by Trek Bicycle. We're the last big bicycle manufacturer in the United States. However, we do make quite a few bikes in China, and we are very concerned about what you're concerned about. And I'm very, very concerned about what you're concerned about. And I'm working within the company, and I will say John Burke, the president of our company, is a very progressive, forward-minded individual that is looking at all of this with open eyes.
I want to ask you a question, because that question kind of bumps up against maybe your 60s ideals with capitalism. And you
bet.
Yes. And Gary and Charlie, you guys started a business together. Tell us about that, Charlie. And what was the business exactly? I mean, obviously, the bike business, but how did it come about?
It was an accident because Gary had his friend Tom Ritchie make a frame for him because I had Joe's frame, but it took a while to get one from Joe. And there were other guys that were Jeff Richmond and Tom Ritchie were looking at the idea also, also Northern California frame builders. And so Gary got Tom to build him a frame. Well, Tom sat around and thought about it for a while and then made a whole bunch more frames without even asking anybody. And then he found he didn't know anyone that bought anything like that. So he basically just put them in Gary's hands and said, can you get rid of these? And
it was a consignment deal.
Yeah, Gary just shows me these
Charlie,
frames.
Charlie, I did ask Tom for the frames.
Well,
I asked him, you know, as many of these you can make, I can sell. That was basically it. When he first made the first, he made 3 frames. I asked for 3 frames, and he said, I'm going to keep this one, and the other one went to
James McWay.
Yeah. Right.
So you guys started this, went into business together. It was not exactly a match made in heaven, though, as business partners.
No, come on.
We're winging it from day one.
It was great when we started, and then, like, things got to be a mess, you know?
I saw...
You didn't have formal business training.
No, but I got it, and, you know, we can go deep into that, too, but, you know, it's basically, you know, in the long term, I did everything that all those advisors told me to do. It was a lot of work.
I just saw a bike that changed hands on eBay, and it was one of the bikes that Gary and I made when there was just two of us working in a rented garage. And I'm looking at a set of wheels I built 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And this bike went for more than twice what it sold for new. And I'm looking at this bike. We were making the most beautiful bicycles. After a while, there was a pressure to make lots of them. But before that pressure was on, right, we made some of the most beautiful bicycles that were ever sold.
Where are they now?
They are in collectors' hands, and people want them bad.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Somebody from your neck of the woods, literally. Sean is on the line from Mill Valley. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Joe, you especially, because I grew up Mill Valley, and you were the first guy to weld a pair of tandem brakes to my front Cook's Brothers fork. And that was back in the time when mountain bikes were so simple. And that beautiful, I still have my old Schwinn, my old Bendix hub, the whole thing. And it was such a beautiful era in Marin County when it wasn't all hyped up. And I think there's such a, there's a poetry to the simplicity of what it was like to ride a simple, hard bike on Mount Tam. And it just opened up the whole world to me, to how beautiful the outdoors was, and to still be able to get back to Mill Valley.
Yes, in the same day.
for dinner time. But by the way, Wendy, I want to thank you absolutely for bringing the images, because I had no clue that history that you folks have been able to diagram in this film is just fantastic. It really puts this in a nutshell for so many people that have no clue about what that was about. And Wendy, you really were the person, I think, that those images are so important. So thank you.
Joe Breeze, do you want to say something? Thanks for the call, Sean.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Thanks for pointing that out, too. It was a much simpler day, and heck, we were all doing it for the love of it. Mm-hmm. I figured I'd be building custom frames for the rest of my life and just enjoying it, not making much money doing it. And that's how these things work. You get into it, you have fun with it, and things progress, and maybe somebody wants to go faster in a race and sponsor a rider, and there becomes a lot of money involved, and the fun kind of drops out of it some. So those were very special days back in the 70s and 80s.
Charlie, do you have any mixed feelings about how big the sport has grown, and has it lost, you know, the fact that it has lost some of those aspects that Sean was describing?
Well, you know, I it's hard quite often to wrap around emotionally something that really we started off just to do with a half a dozen friends and is now a varsity sport at the high school my daughter graduated from. And to see that sweep in my own lifetime and while my kid was going to that school is how can you do anything but just say, wow, it was pretty cool.
You're part of history.
I have to say that mountain biking in Marin County in the schools is the most popular varsity sport. At my daughter's school, Drake High School, 1,100 students, 60 members of the mountain bike team.
Wow.
And they do not get their equipment supplied. They do not get transportation supplied. They bring their own gear, and they get to the races themselves. And, boy, what can you say
about
that?
A lot of that enthusiasm is still
I've been up
there
in Fairfax for the last 20 years now, and our boy is now graduated from being a freshman. He's on the team and having a great time. And it's a sport that you can take with you for the rest of your life, you know, just being healthy. And it's transportation, too.
Yeah, very green. It's a green sport. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones now. Lynn is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to thank you all personally because 12 years ago, I developed a serious chronic pain condition, but only in my feet. And I couldn't walk anymore. And very far. And then I discovered mountain biking when I was in Moab. And it's like my wheelchair into the wilderness. I can now go places. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for you guys. I didn't get away from a road for 2 years.
Wow.
And now I have a way that I can get out. My boyfriend has Lyme disease. And when he's feeling a little better, we go mountain biking. He used to run, and he can't anymore. And it's because of you guys figuring this out. I couldn't believe you could take a bike off the road. I was like, you mean I'm not going to fall over?
Gary, you hear stories like that a lot from people, the impact that you've had?
I hear stories like that a lot, and it's like the greatest payback I could ever have. However, I feel a lot like I know Joe does. It's like we still haven't really reaped the final bounty of the bicycle. And there's a lot of, especially the urban scene right now with the bike, the transportation scene here in the United States. It's so exciting what's going on right now. And we've just started there, you know, and Joe has dedicated his company to that for the last 10 years. And our company has made some huge commitments in the last few years. And
in terms of sort of lobbying cities or what, like doing what?
Well, everything. I mean, on every level. I mean, we donate a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy, but and then product, making the product right and learning what's needed, you know, because it's a whole new area, you know, that we're bringing a lot of energy to. You know, it's funny, you mentioned me, mountain biking. Well, it's sort of green, and the way we used to do it was totally green. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to ride from home. But to be quite honest, I mean, it's sort of become the ornament for the top of an SUV, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, a lot of areas, I mean, gosh, you know, people use the mountain bike on top of a big truck. I mean, yeah. I've been to, you know, parks, you know, mountain bike trail parks where they measure the success of the day by how full the parking lot is. Mm. You know?
Of course, you guys are blessed. You live in a place where you don't need a car to get
right.
to
wh-
well,
what you
gonna,
want to do.
We had key word. We're going to change that in the United States, just like it got changed in the 30s and 40s and 50s into this car culture.
Yeah, Marin did grow up around mass transit from 1902 to 1941. We had a really good interurban system, and so the towns reflect that. And then there are smaller growth. But what Gary brings up about the greater use of the bicycle is really good, and mountain bikes is definitely part of that. And I see it, and imagine you all can concur, that it's stepping stones. You have the road racing bikes that we were first doing, where you showed people that, hey, it wasn't just a sidewalk toy. You could get from A to B in a pretty short time and open some eyes, getting a squib in the local newspaper. And then you had the mountain bike, which made it more accessible to people because it was more comfortable with the squishy tires and the wide handlebars and the soft saddle. And then now the town bikes that you're starting to see, the cruisers and the town bikes fully equipped, more like a car, except you get health while you get where you go, and that's the next stepping stone.
And then you got those recumbent bikes, too, which are a whole other – that's a whole other –
We don't have them.
I'm sure you don't. You might maybe one day you will.
Those are for geeks. I can't ride one of those.
Actually, I've ridden a lot of good recumbent bikes.
Recumbents are great.
I think it's a –
They go
thing.
Fast, man.
They're
there's fast. Some people on the AIDS ride had those.
Yeah.
Whipping
you're out of the
people.
Wind.
Yeah. We're talking about the whole sport being green, Gary, but you know, there are some environmentalists and hikers who have concerns about ripping up the trails or going off of the trail.
Well, that's like changed quite a bit, you know, and we've become the labor force in North America. You know, the mountain bikers are the people that maintain the trails these days, and we've actually become good allies of our friends that ride horses and hike. After all, we're all in it together managing the outdoors, you know, and they realize that we're users too, and we're a huge user group. And yeah, we got some crazy people that we have to police on our own, but by and large, you know,
it's a small percentage.
Yeah, you know, it's like in 35 years, we mountain bikers have failed to kill a single hiker in Marin County.
That's a low standard.
Meanwhile, the car.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Got a few minutes left. Chris in San Jose, welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to know who actually invented the mountain bike. I always hear stories of different people.
Everybody
we'd like to know,
hear.
Too.
Yeah. Nobody here, that's for sure. It goes back, I mean, you know, the word mountain bike, there's some German guy that used it once. The word mountain bike, Charlie and I used it for a company. So that was the first mountain bike, all right. But then you go back, you know, 120 years, all bikes were off-road. So when did an off-road bike become a mountain bike, blah blah blah, it gets really...
Were they sold as mountain bikes, though? I
mean, oh, yeah. We had a company called Mountain Bikes, and it was
But I mean,
the first...
before that? I mean,
No.
I mean, I don't know how you would even say...
I don't know. What, you know, Joe? Do you tell me?
Well, my feeling is that the bikes were invented a lot of times. The sport was invented once. It wasn't that hard an idea to come up with to ride a bike off-road. As Gary said, that's where they started. But the idea that, that we would have an organized sport with record-keeping and rules, that was a big step because that's what a sport is record-keeping and rules. And... then the idea that somebody would actually open a business whose only product was this kind of bicycle was kind of a breakthrough also. So the bikes were invented a lot of times, the sport and the business pretty much once.
There really was no person who invented the sport of mountain biking, and it was really a group effort. a whole lot of people and a whole lot of attrition, too. Mm. And it was in a place where there were just enough people to keep coming in and keep it growing and spilling it out of Marin.
A couple of emails here. We've got one from Ira who writes, was there any industry opposition, resistance, pushback from the industrial producers like Schwinn, Huffy, or were they supportive?
Oh,
Joe?
That was,
Gary?
It was funny. I mean, because the Schwinn guys, they came out and checked us all out. And then they proceeded to make a bike that was sort of a it was neither fish nor fowl. It was part beach cruiser, part BMX bike, part mountain bike, and it was the classic example of like they just totally overworked this thing by committee and everything. And Huffy never showed up.
Murray did.
They did the Baja.
Murray Baja, 1980 or 81. Yeah.
I have a quote from a guy from Raleigh who had seen us at the 1983 bike show in New York, where Gary and I really showed it to the industry for the first time. And this guy is quoted in one of the trade magazines as, mountain biking is a fad and we're not going with it because, anybody can put flat bars and big tires on a bike, but that doesn't really make it marketable. And I'm sure that guy still has a job at Raleigh.
Gary, just a few seconds left. Where's the sport going? Where do you see it going?
It's going off. I mean, and that, you know, the big thing is in North America, there's a ton of new trails all the time. People are building trails like crazy, places to ride the bikes. Mm-hmm. And then this whole high school series, it's like taking it to a whole nother place because you not only got, you know, here's all these new kids coming into the sport, but you've also got their parents. You got a second generation, you know, so we're seeing a second wave.
All right, good. And by the way, this film, which all these folks are in, is called Clunkers. It's by the way, spelled K-L-U-N-K-E-R-Z. And you can find out more at clunkers.com. It's directed by William Savage. It airs as part of the Truly California series on KQED Television this Sunday night at 6 o'clock. Hey, thanks all of you for coming in. Gary's got the white frame glasses on now. He's ready to roll.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
All right. Forum is produced by Tina Lauerberg and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.